This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Dealing with war, not the politics, but the experience of it, is a struggle. As we wind down our longest war ever and more troops come home, we, as a society, are hopefully becoming a little more enlightened and compassionate about how to welcome veterans back into everyday life, which can only mean we learn from our often shabby and judgmental treatment, and I am talking about myself here, of returning Vietnam vets. These days, Neil Connor, resident of Woodstock, PhD, former international banker, and former Marine platoon commander, helps make some kind of sense of his Vietnam experience by restoring military vehicles. These, he says, help Americans better understand what happens to people when they go to war. Neil, who was raised in an Ohio farming community, got his undergraduate degree in sociology.
I discovered that you could either be a social worker or a probation officer. So I became a probation officer in Dayton, Ohio, and did that for a year and a half. And that gets us into early 64. The draft board was starting to make inquiries, and I decided to join the Marine Corps. I wanted to fly jets, but I quickly found out I had bad eyesight. I had no idea. And suddenly I got glasses, and going to the movies was a whole new experience.
Trees had twigs.
Yes.
Why the Marines?
Well, my career path at that time was I wanted to join the FBI. If you had 3 years professional experience in the Marine Corps, then the FBI would take you without a graduate degree. Being a probation officer, I dealt with lots of FBI because of stolen cars, and that's what young boys did in those days. They stole cars. It seems rather innocent compared to what's going on today with gang wars and drugs. Anyhow, that was my plan, to join the Marine Corps, get 3 years experience, and then go into the FBI.
What happened?
Well, after the Marine Corps, and of course a tour in Vietnam as an infantry officer, I was a platoon commander. I did that for 8 months, and then I was an advisor to a Vietnamese program. And, of course, 64, if you think about what happened to this country between 64 and 68, not only was I different when I came home, the country had changed dramatically. And it was like coming home to a whole new society.
How were you different?
Well, combat certainly changes everyone. I'm sure I was a lot sadder. I found that I could sit and talk with elderly people. I had a lot in common with people in their 70s and 80s. No young people come out of war. After war, everybody is middle-aged or older. And if you notice, older people don't smile a lot. They've lost too many friends. That had happened to me still in my 20s.
One Friday night at a football game, the Lord's Prayer said and the anthem sang. A man said, "Folks, would you bow your heads for a list of local Vietnam dead?"
So I was very different. It took my dad maybe 10 or 12 years to say that, but he said, he finally told me that I was very different. Fortunately, I would have left the Marine Corps in December. There was nothing to do. I mean, I couldn't go to school in December. I would have been mustered out in December of 67. So then I decided to stay in the Marine Corps, and they sent me to Quantico to teach at the Command and Staff College. And that was a very interesting experience. I was the most junior person there, but one of a handful that had actually gone to seen battle, because they were staff officers. So I certainly could have stayed in the Marine Corps, but they would have sent me right straight back to Vietnam. And I had barely survived the first tour. And since I was an advisor to a Vietnamese program, that's what they would have had me do. And I had no interest in staying in.
You'd had enough.
So then I went, the plan now, I decided I wasn't going to give my life to the government again. The Marine Corps owned me day and night, 7 days a week. The FBI would have been the same thing. So I decided, no, not going to the FBI. So I went to graduate school and took a degree in international relations with the idea of working with USAID. But by the time I got through graduate school, they had changed to the point where I didn't want anything to do with that either.
In what way? What made that decision?
I guess two things. One is I had become a different person after 2 years in graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I was different enough that I would not fit into the State Department mold.
Okay.
And too much of a maverick. Just didn't want to, again, subject myself to that environment where a lot of demands are made on you both in your personal life and your business life.
You wanted some freedom.
Yes.
Yeah, that you had fought for
yeah.
in more ways than one. Okay, so what next?
Well, with a graduate degree, the best opportunity, I did management consulting for a while, but I wasn't old enough. People wanted the manager to be older, in spite of the fact that I had lots of good ideas. And I had an opportunity to join international banks where we're all hiring people, Chase, Citibank, a bank in Chicago. And I interviewed with these banks, and I liked Citibank because they wanted to send me overseas. They wanted to put me to work almost immediately. And I liked that idea. I was 28 years old. I had an undergraduate degree, 3 or 4 years in the Marine Corps. I was ready. I was as ready as I was ever going to be. And I was with Citibank for 12 years. I was in Asia a lot, lived in the Philippines, Indonesia, Hong Kong.
You liked it.
It was fabulous.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And even somewhere in probably 63, 64, on the way to France, stopped back in Tansanut in Vietnam. And it was eerie with all of the military airplanes and sandbags and so forth. Then, of course, relatively soon after that, Vietnam fell.
Was that 63 or 73?
It would be 70.
73.
73.
Okay. Did you still think of yourself as a Marine? What was your attitude towards the armed services at this point?
Well, it started in graduate school, and I learned very quickly not to volunteer that I had been in the military. I expected and understood that there wasn't going to be any parades. I didn't expect to be persona non grata. When people found out I'd been a Marine officer, they no longer talked to me, had anything to do with me. My only friends in graduate school were other veterans and a rugby team that, because of playing games together and being very physical, a very physical activity, and we drank a lot, we got to know each other. And some of these liberal-minded folks were friendly. But I did not expect to be, I can't think of the word, avoided.
Shunned?
Shunned. Shunned is exactly the...
Did it make you feel bitter?
No, I'd say more sad. And eventually, after struggling with PTSD for several years, just realizing that I was different and was always going to be different. So I stopped trying to fit into somebody else's mold. When I joined Citibank, I think I still had it on my resume, but after I left Citibank, I never again put my military experience on my resume. It was a good way to get no interview.
There he sat, not knowing where he stood. Feeling like a stranger in his own neighborhood. Searching for the answers and the reasons. See, don't worry, and don't worry. They come in pieces.
This went on for years, and I think to some small extent it still goes on. You have to understand that there were 2.5 million guys served in Vietnam, and there were 14 million draft dodgers. There are still a lot of draft dodgers out there. And in some cases, you don't say anything. All you have to do is you walk in the room, and it threatens people. But that's a long way from the military vehicles.
Yes, but I am... You had a jagged time of it.
It got to the point where I could not keep a job. This country may yet again experience this as men come back and try to fit in. But I think it's relatively easier for them because they're not being shunned. They're not being told that they did the wrong thing. And the country has not asked them to lie about where they've been and what they did. For most military people are honorable people, and when you ask them to lie about where they had been and what they did is a big thing.
You're sitting across from me, decked in a Marine veteran hat that has smiles on it. So you've been wearing it for a while. Do you remember when you got that hat?
Yes. This is a very special hat. This was bought for me by one of the Marines in my platoon 40-some years ago. I put him on a helicopter after we had gone through a tank ambush. And I had a real struggle finding my Marines, even though I had their home addresses and their mother's names, because I was a platoon commander. It took years and years to find these men. And he invited me to come down to Charleston and visit him. So it was a fantastic reunion, and he bought me this cap. And it has the 1st Battalion, 26th Marines, 5th Marine Division on it. I don't know where he found it. I've never seen another one like it. But that's very special.
You worked for Citibank for 12 years, and then jobs became problematic, it sounds like.
Yes.
When did you decide to look up your old Marine comrades? What led you to do that?
Well, in the last couple of years with Citibank, I was in Florida, and began to really feel different. And my wife's urging,
uncomfortable, different.
Yes. She finally talked me into going and talking to a Vietnam counselor. And I said, well, I don't have anything to tell him, but I'll go. If you want me to go, I'll go. Well, it took 4 hours. After 4 hours, the guy said, okay, you definitely need to come back here. So that's when I first started dealing with my Vietnam issues, which really, the best I can tell, stem around loss. I had a 40-man platoon, and it turned over 3 times. So that's a lot of men. I have 12 of my Marines on the wall. I have 2 officer friends who are also on the wall in Washington. And I didn't realize how much baggage I was carrying around. It was a little like Flipper McGee's closet, where he'd open the door and this stuff would fall out. I came to understand that it was it wasn't stuff falling out of a closet. A train would roll in with 250 carloads of this stuff. And I learned that I had to deal with it, or it was going to deal with me. And so I found some good counselors. And part of it was I would go to the wall a couple times a year and let those feelings and deal with those feelings.
Did you touch the names of the people that you lost?
I don't know if anyone can tell you why, but you feel compelled to touch them each time you go there. I have rubbings. I have, finally, I've taken pictures of their names so that I can look at it whenever I want.
There's 50,000 names called in the war. There's 50,000 names carved in the war.
So I don't know if you're healing, but you're coming to terms with Vietnam?
Oh, yes.
All right. How did you get from that to military vehicles? And, wait, before we say, we keep talking about military vehicles. How would you describe what you do with military vehicles?
Well, it's a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a hobby that because of the, in my part, the feeling of obligation to explain to the public what these vehicles are and why they're different. And a lot of people, even some of our own hobbyists, call it an old car club. Well, these old cars have brackets so that you can mount machine guns to them. That sets it aside from every other classic car that was ever made. And, of course, there are military ambulances going back to the First World War II that were made from Model Ts. So it is a hobby, but it's a hobby where people have a mission. The men come in various categories. One is they're mechanics. They like to do mechanical things, and it's a great experience to take something that is a ruin and to turn it that time back and make it look like it did when it was in service. And some men, essentially, it's not a restoration process, it's a remanufacture. I did that with my 1952 Marine Corps Jeep. We took it down to the frame, we took every bolt off of it, and somebody said, "Why'd you do that?" I said, "Well, it was the only logical place to start. If you took it completely apart, then you don't have to make any decisions." So it should last a very long time because each part is painted on the inside, outside, underside. When they built these Jeeps, they just sprayed paint on the outside. So with reasonable care, that Jeep should last years and years.
You talk about these guys. Who are these guys and what are they doing?
Well, I first should go back a second. There's a woman involved.
All right.
And in fact, she's the reason I wound up in Woodstock. And Lynn was an extraordinary woman.
She was my second wife.
Her father had been on a minesweeper from World War II. Mm-hmm. And although they didn't call it PTSD, he had suffered and he became a school teacher. But he had a rough emotional spots in his life. Lynn also had a brother who had been in the Air Force, and Vietnam was his undoing also. He made the mistake of telling the generals that the bombs were just blowing up trees, not trucks on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and they cashiered him. So she had dealt with that and helped him find his way into photography and doing craft shows and eventually made a very good living for himself. So Lynn was good at rescuing people, and the truth is that she partially rescued me too. She had a studio where she did decorative glass, stained glass, and had a big parking lot, and another military friend of mine needed a place to park two vehicles. So those
two military vehicles.
Military vehicles. Those two vehicles wound up in her parking lot. Eventually, it became obvious that they weren't going to leave. So she bought them for me as a wedding present in 2000. And that was the beginning of it.
And so where have you gone since then?
Well, those two vehicles were 3/4-ton Dodge pickup trucks. And I never got either one of those to run. In fact, I got one pretty well along, but sold it. And then I looked for Korea and Vietnam, particularly Vietnam trucks because I had my Vietnam uniforms. But then, of course, very soon, I no longer fit into the uniforms. But
what made you decide to start collecting, though? You've got these two abandoned vehicles, and then they're yours as a wedding present.
Well, my wife again helped me with a garage, and she kicked a tenant out so I could have this garage at her building. So now I've got a place to work on vehicles, and I'd always enjoyed doing mechanical work. I guess the next one that came along was an ambulance. It's called a Cut-V, but it's a civilian truck that was made to military specifications. A veteran up in Winchester was in a veterans group, had seen this truck being demolished in a city yard, and asked me to look at it and to see if I could rescue it. It was not the era that I wanted. This truck was used in military bases in the Desert Storm era. But I thought I could use it as a camper, and it's turned out to be a really useful machine. I now pull a trailer with my Marine Corps Jeep behind it. It's really been a useful vehicle. And that's the first one I actually got to run and use, and then I bought another M37 and got that running. And then my last project was the 1952 Marine Corps Jeep. Very few Jeeps were made for the Marine Corps. Most of them were made for the Army.
And this is a real Marine Corps.
It's actually the real deal. And all there's right. Not a lot of them. I hope it's rare because I put a lot of time and money in it.
A couple of very good friends who were in Vietnam combat. And what you said earlier really resonated, that you were going to be coping with that, the fallout from that, for the rest of your life. Is working on these vehicles part of that coping somehow?
Yes. I never, you're not, when you start out, first it was working on a vehicle, get it going. But from the very start, I had a friend who was doing field exercises for the Massanutten Military Academy. Mm-hmm. And so very quickly, the ambulance became part of that. So now I'm doing something with it. About the same time, I started going to rallies in Aberdeen to buy parts and meet people. And one year there, I was recruited by two men from Stanton to be part of a military vehicle club. And then you find out that there are displays and parades that you get involved in. And the next thing I knew, I found myself doing 10, 12, even as many as 20 events, including the end of the year Christmas parades. So,
with your vehicles.
With the vehicles. And in fact, for years and years, I've done the parade in Stanton. And just, three or four years ago, started doing the parade here in Harrisburg. For years, people would meet us in Stanton and ask us to come to Harrisonburg, and we just didn't have enough people and enough vehicles to do it. And then a few years ago, we got to the point where we could do it.
Now, when you talk about we, that's the club?
The club.
All right, and what's the name of the club?
Intermont Military Vehicles. Intermont's a strange word. It literally means between the mountains. So it's very appropriate for Shenandoah Valley.
It certainly is, isn't it? Because we are between mountains. When you left the Marines and came back to this country, you had a lot of sorting out to do about what it meant to be a Vietnam era, particularly a Vietnam era Marine living in America. And has working with these military vehicles, being in all these parades to honor veterans, and has that changed your comfort level with being a Marine who served in Vietnam?
I would think that most of the people who would know me would say, yes, it has. By explaining and making sure, particularly young people, what these vehicles were used for and what men did in them, one of the magical things about this is you're sitting in a parade ground in Woodstock, and a man comes up and tells you that he drove that vehicle and that men lived and died with him in a vehicle like that, it makes it all worthwhile. And we, those of us that do this, that's what it really comes down to. Yes, we like working on them mechanically. It's fun to restore something back to what it looked like 20 or 30 years ago. But at the same time, most of us that do this, the real payoff is when some man will come up and say, could you take me for a ride around the block? It would mean a lot to me. And that's really what it comes down to.
You know, you sounded as though you struggled with isolation, feeling isolated when you came back from Vietnam. And this sounds like sort of the essence of non-isolation. What you get from this, is that too extreme a way to put it?
No, I think that's really true. These people with a common respect for military, and not all very actually the veterans are a minority in this group. Most of these men were not in the military.
No kidding.
But they have become my social friends too. These are these are the people that I do things with that are not necessarily involved with with the hobby.
You know, it is amazing to me how disparate groups build bridges to reach each other. You know, and you talking about this, I'm going to confess something to you now. I was a hippie peacenik, and I remember a friend took me to the wall for the first time, and we were all in line, and the veterans were there in their uniform, and I remember feeling, I don't know, this sort of closeness with my generation, and I don't know what that has to do with anything, but I'll never forget watching veterans touching the wall. Never forget it. Makes me tear up to think about it.
I was prepared to hate it. I wanted a big white marble statue like all the other veterans were getting. At first, I thought, yeah, this figures they're putting us in a hole and it's going to be black. But individual names are on this wall. I have since, in fact, we did a Memorial Day parade. We've done two of them in 2011 and this year. And some of the other guys wanted me to take them to the wall. And I would look at a name and explain who this man was and the fact that one man was a gentle giant. And we lost him very early on, possibly because he stood taller. At any rate, I was able to tell them who these men were, what they looked like, what they were like personally. And many of them came up later and thanked me for it. But I've come to understand it's helped me heal, and I'm sure it's helped a lot of others. And I think it also helps people that were not involved understand why we're the way we are.
How healed are you? Are you more at peace with what you went through and how your country treated you?
I'm not homeless, and I'm not destitute. I haven't been in jail, and I haven't been arrested, and I don't have a criminal record. And it would have been very easy to slip into that. I am financially comfortable, so I've made my way through this far better than a lot of men. There was a group of four or five of us that started a breakfast club up in Winchester because so many Vietnam veterans were committing suicide. And we wanted to make sure that they understood that there were some people who understood them and would listen to their problems.
You'll find a link to Intermont Military Vehicle Club along with event photos on the Spark page at WMRA.org. And in Neil Connor's honor, we'll let the Four Tops take us out with a great song from 1966.